Hello and welcome to the 905 podcast. My name is Roland Tanner.
I am Joel McLeod.
And today we're doing a Thursday roundup, which is going to be heavily election oriented again, because obviously there's an awful lot of news going on and evolving. And we've started rolling out our interviews with the candidates from the three parties that it seems to us are really in this election. I mean, no disrespect to parties that we're not going to be inviting on, but it's a matter of time, and we want to speak to the parties that actually look like they're going to be winning some seats in the local 905 area. And with regard to that, you know, we've been trying to get representatives from those three parties. And well, Joel, why don't you tell the story of how we're getting on with that?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been as soon as the election writ was dropped, you and I had said, okay, vacation's over. Let's start breaking open the notebook and let's get a plan about how we're going to do this. And one of the things we said is the 905 is too big. We can't cover all the. We obviously cannot have every candidate on to talk with them. So we said, let's pick and choose kind of the star candidate from each party in the region, invite them on, and we'll say, you're going to represent your party and make a pitch for your party to all the voters in the 905. We thought that would be a fair way of conducting this. And the first person right off the bat that we reached out to was the conservative candidate in Thornhill, Melissa Lanceman. And if the name strikes a bell with you, it's because we've talked about her a few times on the podcast in the past. But we talked about her in the various stories in the media and said, well, you know what? She seems to be the young, fresh, up and coming, new face of the Conservative Party in the 905 region. Let's have her on and she can share what the Conservative Party has to say about the 905 region. And we reached out to her and her campaign, and she said yes. We were ecstatic. We were thinking this is going to be great, wonderful. We had a date and time set up, all good to go. The day before, I reached out to the campaign manager to confirm, say we are good to go, everything is set. And then we got the unfortunate news. The word had come down from on high from the central campaign, no, she cannot speak with us. Apparently, the Conservative Party said to all their candidates that they could not speak to any podcast. That was the instructions.
Yeah, the direct quote was that candidates are not allowed to speak to podcasts. That may well be true. I mean, it's not the first time that a party, and let's be frank about it, it tends to be the Conservatives. I'm sorry, but it's just a fact. There's no ifs or buts about that. Has tried to avoid the media, but it's incredibly disappointing. It's incredibly disappointing because Melissa Lanceman did the right thing. Her campaign manager did the right thing. They were helpful. They were efficient. They were quick. There's good reason to believe that this is a candidate with serious credibility. Whatever our perspectives might be, we have, I think we can certainly speak for both of us, we have huge respect for people who run for public office. And we really want the public to get to hear everybody, because that's what democracy is kind of about, right? Since we've not been able to get a single conservative person, office, campaign manager, politician to speak to us.
Well, no one's returning our phone calls or our emails. And what irks me is the fact that in my mind, Melissa Lanceman is the ideal choice to have to represent the party to the 905 region. I'm sorry, but like right now you kind of need people like her who are, as you said, credible, just to kind of be speaking up right now. Like the campaign has taken a bit of a left turn for the conservatives, right now. And I think they need either what tells me is one of two things. Either A, they're giving a bad advice to their candidates, or what I suspect it is, they don't trust their candidates. They don't trust them to be allowed to speak about the platform or to speak about conservative values or policy to the public, because they just don't trust them. And that to me, that says something about your leadership and your team. If you say, well, you're not going to let somebody like Melissa Lanceman speak to us. We are not gotcha journalists. I mean, if that's what they're afraid of, we're going to come and say, try and bash her.
We kind of came into this because we wanted to be the opposite of gotcha journalists. You know, and it's like,
well, exactly.
we don't hide our political backgrounds. I'm a progressive. We both have backgrounds with the liberals, which we're not members anymore. We've walked away with that. But now we're doing this. You know, the fact that we are independent is kind of the thing that is most important to us, that we will treat everybody the same. We'll have our say, but we're going to treat you with respect. And if we're going to get past this, and we're going to start talking about some of the nastiness in a few minutes, if we're going to get past this and break down this perception of politicians as untrustworthy, as dishonest, mm-hmm. Then you got to put your people up to speak. And if your candidate, yeah, exactly right. Here's the dirty little secret, and it's not really a secret. Everybody knows this. But if you're really involved in politics, everybody really, really knows this. Every party that runs candidates has some candidates they really don't want to speak. You know, they will be running in seats where they don't have much of a hope of winning. And they're filling up the numbers. Every party, it doesn't matter if they're the Liberals, Conservatives, or the more fringe parties. And we could go and ask to speak to those guys and choose to embarrass the party. I mean, and a lot of the stuff that goes on about, hey, this person said this in 1995 or whatever, comes from those people who are basically seat warmers, and the parties have not done sufficient background checks on them because they don't really care. And so you get these ridiculous election stories, which are kind of eye-rollingly boring quite often. Now, when it's someone who's actually been an MP, such as has happened with the Liberals this time around, or, you know, a serious candidate is with a chance of winning, there's a different story. But so we know there are these candidates, and they're not worth speaking to because they make for really bad interviews, to be honest. So we didn't want to talk to them. But once you get past that, the good candidates really need to have the right to speak. And you know, if the Conservatives want to be taken seriously, put your people up, for goodness sake. And I'm sure that Melissa Lansman would have come on and represented herself extremely well. You know, she's not going to persuade me to side with a lot of things that the CPC stand for, but that, you know, that's by the way. She might do that with some of our listeners, and I'd be delighted for her to have that opportunity.
Well, that's the thing, and that what irks me is that we've reached out to other Conservative Party candidates here in Burlington. We reached out to Emily Brown. Partially, I think it was because of her background in the gun lobbyist or gun rights community. She's posted on her website that her background and her CV has been in shooting clubs locally in the area, and seeing as how that's turned into a political issue, whether you like it or not, it is. But, you know, I'd invite her on, have her talk about it, but get outline the party's platform, give her a shot. Instead, we haven't heard high nor tail from her since we've put out the request.
Yeah, and I should say that we haven't officially asked her for an interview. We would welcome her on for an interview if she wanted to come. We were pursuing other avenues. I did reach out in the start of the campaign just to touch base with her campaign and to get a bio so that I would have the bios of all the candidates in Burlington. No response. I know other media organizations in Burlington have reached out to the campaign and have also basically been told that she won't speak to them. You know, this is going on in every single riding, right? This happens provincially, federally. Most of the candidates usually turn up for the debates because it just looks so bad if they don't, but they'll quite often skip a couple of them. You know, if there's three, they'll go to one or something like that.
The debates are pointless, though. The debates are softball points where, you know, you get asked questions and the public shows up and they get to, you know, it's all theater. There's no actual policy discussion and there's no chance. What I think it was unique about our offer to the parties was we're going to give you about a half hour to make your case. Like, I don't know where else you're going to hear that from.
Yeah.
What just got me about this was the fact that we reached out to the NDP, the candidates, we had Roberto Enriquez on, who I thought, represented himself fairly well. We're going to have Adam Vancouverden on to represent the Liberals in the 905. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. And just would have been nice to have the Conservative Party on, but instead we have this policy of don't talk to anyone because, you know, that we can't have you just talking to anybody in an election. Like, why would you want to do that? And that's that kind of brings us into the second part of our episode today, which is the rise of this, I'm going to call them the fringe far right, anti-vax, anti-mask, anti-science, anti, just basically the anti-wing of our political discourse. And in the latest pollings, we're seeing the rise of the PPC, the People's Party of Canada, in the polls. Right now, they're sitting at about 7% of the polls, which, I mean, it's not enough for them to become government by any chance, but it is enough that it's feasible at some riding across this country, they may win one or two seats. Like, this is green. They're entering into Green Party territory here, where they could possibly take one or two seats. And I know everybody's saying one or two seats. Like, what does that matter? That's nothing. Here's the point. If your party has a seat in the Parliament of Canada, you have legitimacy. You have bona fides. You are in the national discussion. And the problem I have with it is that these people who are supporting the PPC and the candidates themselves are crossing the line away from legitimate conversation into just outright thuggery. And it's a scary moment in our democracy. And the fact that not enough people are calling these thugs out, this is not legitimate conversation. This isn't a legitimate political discourse. It's dangerous that these people are going to have a chance to have influence over the way our laws are formed and created. And people should stop and give pause to this. Regardless of your political affiliation, these people are dangerous. These are this anti-mask, anti-science rhetoric has gone away from, oh my gosh, your eye roll with your uncle at the dinner table too. I mean, these are the people who are blocking ambulances from getting into hospitals. These are the people who are yelling and spitting on people as they're walking in from seeing loved ones at hospitals and throwing rocks at the prime minister.
People with coming out from chemotherapy with not just compromised immune systems, but no immune systems, having to walk through a crowd of people who are shouting at them for wearing masks. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, this is a global phenomenon, or certainly a phenomenon in the Western world, it seems. Just before we came on, we were sort of discussing some of this, and I was remembering that back before I came to Canada, probably the last election or so that I was over there, the UKIP, the UK Independence Party, already existed. Most people thought they were a joke. They were just time wasters. A lot of the people who ran for them were clearly not capable and not particularly bright and you know, actually real liabilities when it came to interviews. And yet what ended up happening with that is that Britain was taken out of Europe, basically because they were the tail that wagged the Conservative dog. Don't ever mistake a fringe group of crazy people, which basically these people are. And they get upset when you call them these people. And I'm going to say, yeah, you people are abominable. You're racist. You're a disgrace. And thank goodness for our democracy who lets people like you still run. But that doesn't mean I have to be nice about you. But don't ever mistake, you know, we should not mistake that groups like this cannot get traction, because we're seeing them get traction. A group like that just ran America for 4 years. And obviously, you know, we've what's the old saying? Well, it used to be that, you know, America catches the cold and Canada gets the flu. I'm not sure that's a good metaphor at the moment. Certainly, I think the whole sort of QAnon conspiracy world that we're in now is reflected in so much that's going on. And it's this sense of white victimhood and fragility and persecution that seems to be behind so much of it. At the same time, these people portray themselves as the roughy tough guys. You know, they're just whiners, really. But anyway,
these are people who can't handle the fact that Canada has changed in the last 50 years. The PPC represents an anti-progress change. Like it's not about moving Canada forward. It's not about making Canada better for anyone. It's about fear. It's about stoking fear of immigrants. It's about fear of trans people. It's about fear of equality. It's about fear of your neighbor. It's about fear of science. It's just, let's make you so scared of everything that you think you're empowered, but in reality, you've closed yourself off from educating yourself about the reality of the situation, empowering yourself. And this is a dangerous factor to play footsies with. And I wanted to bring it up in this episode because for too long in this country, we're become so complacent about this stuff. We sit there and we say, oh, this can't happen in Canada. We're so nice. We're so polite. We're so Canadian. And this stuff doesn't happen here. It is happening. It's happening right now. And we're being too polite about it. We're being too polite because we say, oh no, we have to let them have their say. They have an opportunity to stand at the microphone. No, they don't. They don't. You don't have to listen to them. You don't have to give them a fair shot. You can turn around and walk out the door and say, no, you don't represent me. I'm not afraid of the vaccine. I'm not afraid of wearing a mask. I'm not afraid of letting my children wear a mask and hopefully take the vaccine one day when it becomes available for them. I'm not afraid of refugees coming into my country. I'm not afraid of somebody discovering that they're trans. I'm not afraid of gay, lesbian, bisexual, people. I'm not going to live my life that way. And I'm not going to hear from somebody who is that weak in their constitution that they're going to succumb to that fear to say, well, I have to live with you. I have to give you equal footing. No, I don't. And here's the thing. We know we don't because we're talking about vaccine passports. The majority of Canadians want them. Majority of people say we've paid our dues. We've cut ourselves off from our loved ones, from our work, from our public spaces. And you know what? I don't want to share that space with the ignorant and the fearful and the people who yell and spit on cancer patients as they enter and leave hospitals. I don't want to share that space with them. So you know what? I'm going to get a vaccine. I'm going to get double dose and I'm going to get my vaccine passport. And you know what? I'm going to show it every time I want to enter a restaurant, every time I want to enter a movie theater, or every time I want to enter a gymnasium. And I'm going to show it and be proud of it. And I'm going to say, you wait outside. It's my turn to enjoy this. It's my turn to engage with my life and with my loved ones and my friends and family. And now you get to sit in the corner and you can be miserable and complain and you can shout at the tinfoil hat squadron all you want. You're not going to bother me. But where you're not going to do that is in my parliament, is in my House of Commons, because it is mine. It is yours. It is everyone's in Canada. It's our house. It's where the people's business is done. And we shouldn't allow these fringe lunatics in there to just mess it up. That's all they're going to do is just mess it up. And we can't do that. And we need to start taking this stuff seriously, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Canada, the good, Canada, the nice is a phrase that's come up a couple of times this year in different contexts. There's that real genuine side of Canada that is polite and nice and friendly, but we know every society in the world has its difficulties and its undertones, and that there's certainly a deep thread of racism that runs through that's been kind of hidden from us because because it just wasn't polite to sort of admit to what you might actually think, if you like. And what the whole Trump era has done is allowed these people to say, no, I'm a racist and I'm proud, kind of. I mean, they'll still deny they're racist, but much less in a hidden fashion than they might have done in the past. We've given license to people's worst sides to kind of come out into the open. And yeah, I mean, what you were saying about, I'm not afraid of all these things. And most of all, what we're not afraid of is that if you give everybody in Canada a level playing field, that somehow we're going to not be able to survive in that world where, people of color, have the same chance of getting hired as anybody else, or where women get paid the same as anybody else and can run for office or run for, be a CEO or whatever at the same numbers as men. You know, people who are resisting that are basically saying, well, hey, I've had a leg up for all this time. And if you take that away from me, I'm not going to be able to survive. Well, what a sucky point of view that is. I mean, how fragile and feeble is that perspective? That you basically think you can't compete on a level playing field with the rest of the country. It's depressing to watch this stuff.
That's exactly it. And I just want to bring it back to our first story about the Conservatives not stepping up to the microphone, so to speak, and coming on to talk, let their candidates talk publicly. This is kind of what happens. Like, these supporters... It's not just black, you know, it's not just cut down the middle. You can't just divvy up. These are people who are, I believe people do get lured into it. It's nice to, you hear a few things like, well, that makes, you know, that kind of, I kind of see your point there. And you get lured in and you start drinking the Kool-Aid. And before you know it, you're running around with the tinfoil hat brigade. And the Conservatives have kind of played footsies with these people for the last few years. The fact that, you know, Erin O'Toole won't be definitive on vaccination, are we going to get vaccine passports or not, is an indication that you're playing footsies with these people because you don't want to upset them. And there are certain things that you just have, I don't see why vaccines are political. Like, you either, we take them or we don't, and then you have to encourage people to get them. The problem is all the people who are willing to get them have already got them. And so, fine, if we need to encourage the rest by getting some kind of vaccine passport system in place, so be it. But, you know, the part of it is that the Conservatives do need to step up and start taking back their agency on this front and start reclaiming the right spectrum of the Canadian political landscape, because they're losing ground quickly to people like the PPC. They're losing the ground to these folks because they trade in fear. Their currency is fear, and they are cashing it in with Conservative Party voters, which is why we're seeing this uptick in support across the country for the PPC. And this part of this is, for me, this episode is just a call to the Conservatives: is step up, man, step up, get out there, and start earning back that credibility, because these clowns can't be allowed any more of a footstep into our political discourse. They just can't. Because if you give them an inch, they will literally take a yard.
Yeah, and you can't exist in a world where you're basically saying that anybody who is to the left of the Conservatives is not worth speaking to. Like, we're hoping that this podcast will become, it's growing more and more popular all the time. Our numbers keep going up, which is very satisfying. And we're aiming it at everybody who lives in the 905. You're basically saying that pretty mainstream opinions, which I think we really have, not to be trusted. That you can't trust your candidates with us, and that we're not trustworthy to sort of share the air with. Now, the candidate in Burlington and multiple other Conservative candidates who are now not speaking to podcasts, not speaking to anyone else. If you go onto YouTube, you'll find all kinds of interviews that they did earlier in the year with things like the Young Conservatives Association, or, you know, various conservative groups. So they will speak to their own, but they will not speak outside their bubble, if you like. Which means that they're scared of losing votes to the right because they know that they can't really, I'm not even trying to go to the left to any significant degree. To sort of bring in those blue liberals, for want of a better word, who might consider sort of going to a more moderate conservative party. They're not even interested in that. And this brings us back to a huge topic, actually, which I think, you know, has not been addressed at all during this election. And if I was, certainly if I was Jagmeet Singh, I would be trying to make it front and center, but he doesn't seem to be very interested. And that's the whole issue of electoral reform, which, you know, was the Liberals promised to do in 2015 and then backtracked on. We're having these conversations right now. Oh, wow, in the first couple of weeks, the Conservatives are doing really well. You know, they've got 32% of the... that's not doing well. If your leader has 32% estimated, it doesn't matter if all the other guys have less. That's a terrible number. You do not have a mandate to open a fruit shop with that kind of vote share. We shouldn't be talking about winners and losers who can win with not just... a minority of the vote, but far, far less than 40% of the vote. You have to start talking about parties working together. And then, I mean, that's the other side of things. It's so frustrating when we see people getting more and more jaded and pessimistic about the ability of politics to work for them and turning to extremism out of, this is no excuse for being a racist piece of whatever. However, I do kind of recognize the frustration that is out there in a much more wide sense in the population of feeling that politics is not working for us anymore. And it's because we have this crazy system that will hand 100% of the power of the power to a party that just took a small minority of the vote. And we're talking about, you know, 2% here or there will hand everything to the Conservatives or the Liberals. That ain't right. And you know, the biggest disappointment I will certainly always have of Trudeau's time, however long it might go on, is that they turned their back on that, having made a commitment. There was no real need to. And right now, we would be talking about a fundamentally different election if we had a proportional representation system put in place after 2015, because we will be looking at, okay, which of these two parties are going to work together to form a stable government for the next 4 years, rather than, well, this looks like we're going to have another minority, which is going to last another year ago, and then we'll have to do this all again. You know, we've got to grow up and start having serious conversations about all the things that are wrong with our systems that are giving us bad results. And that will give people some kind of hope that politics can work for them again. That's my TED talk.
Let's leave it at that for this week. Before we go, if you listened this far and you've been enjoying the 905er to date, why not throw us some money? Roland, you set up a Buy Me a Coffee account, which the link is in the show notes. So if you're if you weren't concerned about subscribing to our Patreon because you didn't want that, you weren't thinking of that long of a commitment, try and buy me a coffee. Give us a few bucks here and there, and it'll go a long way to keep us on the air.
Yep. We'll leave the link, and you can just throw us the price of a coffee, quite literally, and that would be absolutely fantastic.
Make it a macchiato. Give us the big coffee.
Thanks, everybody. We'll speak to you next time.
That's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now,
See you next time.
The host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at broadcastdialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.